This is the Top 25 Rundown, and here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by the Sportscast. Today is January 25th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. It'll help us out tremendously. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, Play Sportscast. You can also visit us on the sportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter at the Sportscast1 and check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West, and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown. I am joined tonight by Bob Alves, high school sports commentator, public address announcer, host of the Sports for Fame, multiple other jobs and activities. Thanks for coming on, Bob. How are you tonight?
Hey, Alan. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, very glad to do it. Today, we are going to take a look at the Top 25 for men and women's basketball, where there were not only a few upsets, but you can see many leaders are making a stronger case for their top seeds in the tournaments that are upcoming. Also, we will catch up on the hockey rankings for men and women's hockey. Going back to men's basketball, we saw a few games that looked like an upset was possible during the last week. But Bob, you told me that you had been at a game tonight. And why don't you tell everyone else what you were able to see?
Right, I was at a Division III college basketball game between Lynchburg and Randolph, and I had the opportunity when I was leaving to walk out right behind North Carolina head basketball coach Hubert Davis, and Hubert's son Elijah plays for University of Lynchburg. And you know, it's just awesome to see a father supporting a son like that, because I believe Hubert Davis has got a lot of stuff to do right now. You know, he's head coach of North Carolina. They're trying to find themselves right now, and for Coach Davis to be there to support his son. I'm not a UNC fan by any stretch, but that makes me a Hubert Davis fan.
That's true. I seem to recall you appreciating a school that had a coach that retired in the last year, if memory serves.
Yeah, I used to be a really big Duke fan. I've since kind of back down a little bit on that, but you know, my dad went to Memphis State, which is now Memphis, when he was in school. So I really kind of pulled for Memphis back in the you know, Derrick Rose, Chris Douglas Roberts days. Duke has always been a very good school, and you know, what started my fandom of Duke was probably I hated UNLV at that point in time. So I said, hey, why not pull for Duke? And I've always respected Mike Krzyzewski and the program he's run, but you know, when you look at the top 25 now, and I know you're going to get into this in a minute, there are just so many wonderful coaches. I mean, I don't understand, you know, how anyone can say a bad word about Tony Bennett at the University of Virginia, because he's doing it the right way. He's recruiting those student athletes. And then, I mean, you look at a lot of coaches. I mean, Bill Self has had a ton of success over the years at Kansas and at Illinois and at Tulsa. Scott Drew, I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done at Baylor. And then, I mean, you look at other schools too. Maybe they're in the top 25, maybe they're not, but their coaches are really hard workers. You look at Tommy Lloyd out of Arizona. I mean, in his second year and from Gonzaga, he learned from one of the best in Mark Few. And I think you've got to really take your hat off to him. It's much more of a competitive world now, because if you don't, it's not about making a tournament anymore. You got to go deep and you got to win in order to avoid, as Dick Vitale would say, the Ziggy the Act.
That is true. I mean, when I was taking a look at some of the games last Wednesday, I know I had talked with Nick, who had been on last week, and he was telling me he was actually prepping me for the Arizona State and UCLA game to happen the next day. But I see that number 8 Xavier last week lost to DePaul 73-72. I had been watching the Virginia Tech Virginia game, where Virginia did hold off and win 78-68. TCU had got upset by West Virginia 74-65, and then Seton Hall beat UConn 66-67. That, and then for the SEC, you see the Missouri loss to Arkansas 79-76, which that is 1, 2, 3, 4 teams in the top 25 right there on Wednesday that lost. And that's not including Marquette beating Providence 85-73. The only team that wasn't upset was Auburn against LSU that on Wednesday, which it just shows the parity that we're having this year. And not only that, what else we're going to be expecting for a lot of the games, because some people think that the games are just going to be easy and the same every day, but watching how all the games are, it's more of a question of who's going to win and how much they're going to win by if they can win.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things when people get crazy in March and start filling out their brackets. I mean, you know, normally you see one team that is predominant, but I think if you have a group of friends that you're playing who's the smartest with and you're filling out a bracket, I mean, you know, if you've got, let's say, 50 friends in a group, I mean, you might have, you know, 10, 15 different winners, which is, you know, very unusual at this time. I mean, I think there are a lot of teams that, you know, you don't want to peak at this point in the year, but there are a lot of teams that have that one player. There are a lot of teams that people will use the terminology, when are they going to find themselves? So there's a lot of basketball left to be played. And, you know, you got to get hot for 6-7 games in that NCAA tournament and cut down the nets. It doesn't really matter, unfortunately, what you do in, you know, December, January, even February. I mean, that conference tournament obviously matters because you got to get in. And once you get in, who knows?
That is so true. And then actually on Thursday, I saw that Purdue played Minnesota and won 61-39. And unfortunately for Nick, who was kind enough to be on last week, Arizona State did lose to UCLA 74-62. But Gonzaga got beat by Loyola Marymount 68-67. Whereas Michigan State also upset Rutgers 70-57. And I mean, well, you can't really count Tom Izzo out, even though it's early, because you know that once it's tournament time, he's going to come back. I do see that Charleston beat Monmouth 69-55, and Florida Atlantic beat UTSA 83-64. And Arizona was able to beat USC, like you were talking about.
Yeah, I think, and you hit the nail on the head, I think, with Tom Izzo. I mean, there are a lot of people that say, well, you know, that guy is a good tournament coach. This guy is a good tournament coach. Then they look at somebody that says, you know, maybe this guy is not a good tournament coach, yet he's at a blue blood, because either that team hasn't made many Final Fours, or, you know, that team has struggled lately. But I'll tell you what, if you go back and look at the history of college basketball, just from 1980, 1990 to present time, I can name you probably a lot of good coaches that don't have one national title. Or maybe, you know, and you look at Dean Smith. Dean Smith's considered one of the greatest coaches of all time, and I think he only had two national titles. So, I mean, you know, it's funny how people judge what is a great coach or what is a great team, and it comes down to what you do in March.
It's true. I mean, as much as I would love to say that other people are going to say that during the regular season counts more, incredibly, that's not the case. I mean, that's why watching some of the games this weekend, looking at Saturday's scoreboard, TCU beat Kansas 83-60. Alabama beat Missouri 85-64. Arizona upset UCLA 58-52. Gonzaga came back against Pacific and won 99-90. Texas was able to beat West Virginia 69-61. Xavier was able to beat Georgetown 95-82, which we're going to get back to in 1 second. Tennessee was able to beat LSU 77-56. UVA did beat Wake Forest 76-67. Oklahoma State was able to upset Iowa State 61-59. Kansas State was able to beat Texas Tech 68-58. Auburn beat South Carolina 81-66. Duke was able to upset Miami 68-66. Charleston beat Northeastern 87-61. Clemson survived against Virginia Tech 51-50. Marquette beat Seton Hall 74-53. Baylor was able to come back and beat Oklahoma 62-60. Providence beat DePaul 75-64. Florida Atlantic was able to beat UTEP 67-59. And Arkansas was able to beat Ole Miss 69-57. So before we hit on the Duke and Miami game, I do want to go to Georgetown and Xavier for a very simple reason. Unfortunately for Patrick Ewing, just watching him as he's been coaching, the last 2 years, I'm pretty sure he has only won, I think, one Big East conference game right now.
Yeah, and that was the other night, I believe, against DePaul when they broke a 30-game losing streak. So, yeah, the days of Patrick Ewing in a Georgetown uniform are probably much more memorable and favored by people when Patrick was actually on the court playing, not when Patrick was on the court coaching. And, you know, Alan, you bring up a great point right there. You know, a lot of these blue bloods have been blue bloods in the past, but they're not blue anymore. Now they bleed red like most all of us do. So, you know, yeah, Georgetown's one of those schools that really has to find itself and find itself quick, because otherwise it might mean Mr. Ewing's employment.
Yeah, just because I could be incorrect about this, Bob, but if memory serves, it's been from JT 2, then it went to Craig Eschrick, then I want to say it was JT 3, and now it's Patrick Ewing.
Yep.
I think I'm not sure if I was missing a coach there or not, but I mean, you can tell that for certain coaches, when they fired JT3, you could tell that that was tough, but they thought that Ewing was going to be the best coach at the time. Unfortunately, right now, I'm not seeing it, because he can't really get a win to save his life, it almost feels like. I mean, if there was a coach that's on the hot seat, I would think it's got to be him right now.
Yeah, I think the seat's been hot for a while, and I'm honestly surprised. If it wasn't Patrick Ewing coaching there, he would have been dismissed a long time ago. I think I always say when you hire somebody, you're hiring them to be fired. There's exceptions to that rule. But I don't know about you, Alan, but I always think, gosh, it's going to be hard to fire an alum.
Oh, yeah. No, and I mean, because Patrick Ewing, how much of a staple he was during the true glory years of Georgetown.
Absolutely.
Washington, how he's been right now, has also been kind of tough to stomach, because Georgetown, you don't ever think of as an under 500 team. You don't even think of them as not even sniffing contention for a Big East title, and now seeing them, how they're not even in contention the last 2 years and fighting to just get one or two wins every year, that's unthinkable.
Well, and the other thing, too, we've got to remember is, you know, I know I'm a little bit older than you, obviously, but the Big East is not the Big East what we remember. I mean, it's, you know, right. You don't have Syracuse. You don't have, you know, I know you got some of those schools still in there, but St. John's is not what St. John's was in the 80s, in the 90s. UConn is not what they were. They're trying to get back there. But, you know, a lot of these schools, I don't want to say they're bad, but they're beatable for Patrick Ewing, because you have not seen a national champion come out of the Big East lately. I know you've got Creighton in there now, but Creighton's best years were when McDermott's kid was playing for them, not, you know, right. And he's a good coach, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it's yeah, those times have changed, and I think people are beatable, and Patrick's just not beating them.
That is very true. I mean, the other game I was going to bring up, like I just said, was Miami losing to Duke, just because between those two right now, those are the two teams that are within striking distance come tournament time already, just looking at it, because they're going to be looking at seeding for the ACC tournaments. And with that being the case, you got to think that they're going to struggle more, just because with how the record is right now, looking at the ACC conference, you've got Clemson number one, Virginia number two, Pittsburgh number three. Miami's tied with Pittsburgh for number three, and then with North Carolina as well. And then you have NC State, Wake Forest, and Syracuse in the tie for fourth, and then you have Duke.
That's pretty shocking. Just on face value when you talk about the top. Well, when you say the top team, and it's not a school from North Carolina, that's shocking in itself. When you say Duke, when you got a three-way tie for fourth, that puts Duke at seventh. And I wouldn't want John Shire's job for anything, because I mean that's tough shoes to fill. Even though he was a player, it's kind of like we talked about. Yep. He's an alum, but you know he ain't Patrick Ewing. I mean, yep. You know, John Shire is not revered in those circles, but John Shire is bringing in recruits, and you know, at a certain point, it's great to bring in recruits, but you better win too.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Ashwin, I just went back and looked. Duke's actually ninth in the ACC right now, and the team that's right below them is Florida State. And right now, Florida State's record for the year is 7-14.
Ouch!
Yes,
might be the best way I can use to describe that word.
Just because right how there. Leonard Hamilton is normally, you see how they contend every year, and so. Last week, I found out that Florida State was not having a good year, and that was a shock to me, because you always see him come tournament time. His teams are always ready, and usually they make it to the Sweet 16.
Right.
So when I was looking at Sunday's games, Houston, the number one seed, got upset by Temple 56-55, whereas Purdue beat Maryland 58-55, and UConn beat Butler 86-56. So, I mean, Houston losing, that's definitely going to change how the standings are going to be. Because the person I spoke with last week, Nicholas Odell, he had told us that the Big 12 is the conference that you need to watch out for this year as the best conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I mean, Houston, you talked about, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Houston is one of those, I think, teams that right now is a true blue blood for sure. They're going to be a number one seed, and not only that, but they're going to be a tough out. But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. You don't want to be a number one seed, A, stumbling into the tournament, and B, you don't want to have anything funky happen to where that number one seed becomes a number two.
Exactly. That and the thing for Houston, I was surprised that they did lose, but this kind of reminds me for Houston, just like you'll know, kind of like the five slam a jamma with Olajuwon and Drexler, just because I believe Kelvin Sampson is the coach there now.
You're correct.
And so he, even though he had his issues at Oklahoma and Indiana, I believe.
Right.
It seems like he's having kind of a rebirth, and not only that, the way that he's able to lead Houston right now, pretty impressive.
Yeah, and Kelvin Sampson never really had issues in terms of winning and losing. I mean, he did a little bit in Indiana, but not so much at Oklahoma. But the issues that Kelvin Sampson had were more, I don't want to say ethical, but more those type of issues instead. But nobody's ever disputed Kelvin Sampson's coaching. But again, it's kind of one of those things to when you look at how many national titles does the guy have. He has zero, but he's probably in one of the best contention spots ever to kind of get that Final Four berth. And, you know, Houston's got a rich basketball tradition. I mean, you mentioned it, by slam a jamma. I mean, Clyde Drexler, Hakeem Olajuwon, they have a 30 for 30 on them on ESPN. And, you know, they also, everybody in the world thought that they would beat NC State in 1983. So, they didn't, and they're having a very nice resurgence as well. And I can tell you, a lot of people like the Cougars.
I agree. I mean, I'm just waiting to see how it's going to set up, because I'm looking forward to making my bracket this year, because I took 2 years off. So I'm waiting to see what happens. Although normally I would root for Ohio State for the men, but right now they're not looking that good, which. It's a shame, but you got to have rebuilding years some years. And they had a pretty good run last year in the tournament. So if this year's a rebuilding year, so be it. But it just means that next year, anything can happen, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I was just perusing Kelvin Sampson's record of success, and there's a lot of NCAAs in there. There's some NITs as well. He's been to two Final Fours, actually, one in Houston and one in I think he was in Oklahoma. So, you know, he's a guy that's been able to coach very well. And right now you're just seeing and again, Houston is not in the strongest conference. I mean, it's not a Power Five league. So I think they're really having that opportunity to, you know, put kind of their stamp on this team and hopefully head into the NCAA tournament with a lot of momentum.
Absolutely. And if memory serves, I want to say the year when they went to the Final Four with Oklahoma, I want to say that was the year they had Trae Young there.
I believe you're right. I'd have to look into that. But, I mean, you know, I'm just looking at Kelvin's records here. And he lost 11 games at Indiana his first year. But his combined record in 2 years at Indiana is 43-15.
I mean, that's impressive. Bad. I mean, a lot of coaches would want that record even within 5 to 7 years, hope for something like that. So for him to be able to pull that off in 2 years at Indiana, which is a true blue blood, that's definitely very impressive. When I was looking at going into Monday's scoreboard for the top 25, there were two games. Kansas was upset by Baylor 75-69, and then number 25, New Mexico lost to Nevada in a double overtime thriller, 97-94. Which I'm glad that they're getting out some of these upsets out of the way now, but I don't want to say it's too early to think about this, but with the conference tournaments coming up within about a month, wouldn't you think that some of these games you're kind of a little bit worried about seeding already? Is that fair to say?
I definitely think you're right. And I think a lot of it is you got to take care of the business you're supposed to take care of. I mean, you know, you talked about Nick being on the show last week. And if you look at the Big 12, there are six teams in the top, out of the 10 teams that the Big 12 has now, six of them are ranked in the top 17. The other four that are not ranked, nobody has a record overall below 500. So that says to me there's a lot of strength and a lot of parity in the Big 12. And, you know, you got to protect home court and hopefully steal a road win or two.
Yeah, speaking of the Big 12, on Tuesday, Iowa State played Kansas State and won 80-76. Texas beat Oklahoma State 89-75. Oklahoma lost to TCU 79-52. Then we had two ACC games. Miami beat Florida State 86-63. And Clemson beat Georgia Tech 72-51. Although the thing is, when I'm looking at the Big 12 games, for the two teams that aren't even ranked, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, they both are 11-9 overall. Right. With that, you normally wouldn't see that. And so when you can see something like that, it kind of reminds me of for college football, just how when we were looking at the playoffs, how Alabama had they not lost the second game, how you could have had them in there playing for being one of the four teams besides Georgia.
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of people thought, you know, I think reputation carries a lot with people. And I, to this day, I was, you know, I don't know if fearful is the word, because I'm not an Alabama fan, nor was I a fan of any of the four teams that made the playoff. But I think you always had in the back of that mind, gosh, is Alabama going to get in? Are they going to bump somebody out just because they're Alabama? And, you know, Bryce Young had said he was going to play the bowl game. I mean, a lot of people opt out. So, yeah, I think the blue blood thing is definitely I don't want to say a concern, but it's definitely there. And I'll tell you, if you've been in a coma or been asleep for the past couple of years and not paid attention to college basketball, and you just go to the page where you can see records, I mean, you're going to think, what land do we live in where Louisville is 2-18? And what land do we live in where Clemson is 17-4? I mean, Clemson's had some good teams, don't get me wrong, but I mean, you know, to see that Clemson's at the top and Louisville's at the bottom, and then, you know, to see Duke, like you mentioned, ninth in the league, to see Carolina even fifth in the ACC. I mean, they're tied for third, but they're tied with Pitt and Miami. And, you know, for an old fuddy-duddy like me, it's still weird to see Pitt and Miami listed in the ACC. But to see them ahead of a team like North Carolina, yeah, what bizarre world do we live in sometimes?
Well, that and the thing is, for me, I live near George Mason. And so before Jim Larrañaga went to Miami, he was at George Mason for a long time.
Right.
I mean, I was surprised he went to Miami when he got that job. But, I mean, I knew that once he got there, Miami was going to have some good years. They were going to have some bad years. But just the coach that he is, they were going to be competitive every year. And, I mean, you see that they are still competitive when other people would have looked at them like, oh, they're not going to do very well this year. Then you're watching it's like, oh, wow, they're still making strides.
Well, and I think the other thing that surprised people about Jim Larrañaga leaving George Mason and going to Miami, he was not a young man.
Nope.
At the time of leaving. So I think a lot of people felt probably like he was just going to finish up at, you know, at George Mason, which I honestly don't think would have been a bad deal at all. I mean, you know, Larrañaga took that George Mason team to a Final Four. They were a true Cinderella. I mean, he's there for almost 15 years, I think 14, heads to Miami in 2011, born in 1949. So, again, you look by the time he went to Miami, he's 62 years old.
Yeah, no, he is – when he was at George Mason, basically they would be in the tournament almost every year. It was just kind of like, okay, well, let's just see how he's going to do it. And the one year when they made the tournament – or one of the years, they had to play Georgetown.
Yep.
And I remember because Craig Eschrick was a coach there, and Georgetown did win, but it was there was no love lost after that game.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, if you go back further, I mean, Larrañaga had been an assistant at Virginia from 1979 to 1986, and anybody that knows basketball and maybe who is one of the greatest college basketball players of all time, his name is Ralph Sampson. And Ralph Sampson was at UVA in that time frame. You know, Larrañaga is a Northeastern guy, but the last time I checked my map, Miami, Florida is not in Northeast. And that was the farthest south he had gone. So, yeah, I think you hit on a great point right there. I mean, you know, most people, you know, unless you're a snowbird and you're going to retire to Miami, that's one thing. But to leave and at the age of 62 to try out a new job in a part of the land that you never have been a head coach at, yeah, that's different, challenging, and hey, kudos, because it's worked out for him.
No doubt about that. I actually was checking out the games tonight for a minute, and I saw that Xavier beat UConn 82-79. Houston rebounded from their loss and beat UCF 82-71. Tennessee beat Georgia 70-41. Providence beat Butler 79-58. Alabama beat Mississippi State 66-63. And then Texas A&M upset Auburn 79-63. Which that's going to probably have Auburn fall into the between 20 and 25, or it could have them drop out completely depending on how the rest of the week goes. But that these games already this year, this week, since last week, there have been plenty of upsets here that we've already touched on, even some that we haven't. But just looking at the games, you can tell that even though the phrase for football, any given Sunday a team can lose, just watching how this is for teams in basketball, you're seeing not only they're losing, but it's still somewhat early enough in the year to where they can recover, just because how different leagues, when they have to win their conference tournament to make it in to the NCAA tournament, this may affect their seeding, but they still have a chance, which is a good thing. But it's just depending on seeing which ones are doing as well and how far they're going to go right now, just to even set that up.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is look at the schedule in November, December, and just take a look at the guys that lose those early games, because you know what? They count in March. I mean, it's not as bad as, you know, if you lose to a, you know, no-name school in November, December, you got time to rebuild. But guess what? That's a loss. And those conference losses are adding up too. Now, it might not be a big deal if you're a blue blood and you play in the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, but those losses add up. And that's one thing I think we all have to remember, because even in my, you know, high school interviews with basketball coaches, they always say, you know, I don't believe in December basketball. You still got to win the games. We might be early in the year, but we still got to win the games.
I mean, that's so true. And that's why just checking out the different games that we're able to see and just even looking at for different conferences. Like, I'm looking at the Pac-12 right now. We have UCLA on top with an 8-1 record. Utah is next at 7-3. They have a 14-7 record.
Right.
And then Arizona and USC and Arizona State, they're all 6-3 with records of 17-3, 14-6, and 15-5. You have to get down to Washington State being in a three-way tie with Washington and Colorado to find a team that's under 500.
Yeah, eight schools in the Pac-12 above 500. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, again, you'd really have to be a guy with too much time on your hands to really deep dig and deep dive some of this, because if you look at a school like Colorado, for instance, and I'm going to look at them right now just to bring up a point here. They're 12-9. I don't know if this is going to be a good point or not. I mean, you know, one of those nine losses is to Grambling. And, you know, we don't want to play the game of, well, if Colorado lost to Grambling, when Colorado beat UCLA, then Grambling can beat UCLA. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying that loss is a bad loss early in the year. And when you add up the rest of these losses, you know, unfortunately, Grambling is going to stick out. And any loss of a to a school like that, it's going to stick out. And, you know, I don't want to say it's damage control, but you really got to figure out a way to not let one loss like that tank your schedule.
Well, I mean, I'll give you another example. I'm looking at the SEC conference right now. And other than South Carolina and Ole Miss, everyone has a 500 and better record overall. Even in conference play, they're not as strong. But when you're seeing that there's only three schools that are 500 and below, I mean, one point I brought up was Kentucky last week, how they had upset Tennessee. Just because this hasn't been the best year for Kentucky, but
they're that's an understatement. That's an understatement by you, sir.
True, true. But I mean, the thing is, watching how they've been playing the past 2 weeks, you're starting to see that they're not only making moves that they need to not only win, but their Oscar Tshiebwe. He's been stepping up in big time, because if he hadn't, it could be a lot worse for them, because when they came into the year this year, you would think that they were going to be one of the teams that was going to be contending, and now they're starting to build back toward that, but it's just a wait-and-see approach right now is how they're having to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, Kentucky has lost to three ranked teams out of their six losses, but you hit the nail on the head again. The expectations were much greater than a 14-6 record. I mean, if you lose six games at Kentucky in a year, you're talking about either A, you're going to get fired, B, somebody's going to come after your dog, or C, you might want to look for a different job. And I think, you know, not to get off on a tangent here, but I think that's why some people would be in the Big Blue Nation would not be upset if John Calipari entertained the Texas job, which has been rumored a few times, because, you know, I mean, I would, if, you know, take your favorite school, take Ohio State, take anywhere. Most people are going to be giddy with a 14-6 record.
Mm-hmm.
Not at Kentucky.
Oh, no. No, at Kentucky, that's kind of all hands on deck, basically, just watching how they are, because you don't expect them to lose more than, I'd say, 3 or 4 games in a year.
Right.
But, I mean, this kind of shows that Calipari, if he does go for the Texas job, so be it. But until then, he's doing one of his, I'm not going to say his greatest coaching masterpiece, but he's definitely working his butt off to try to get his players to contend in every game and make sure that if they are going to lose, they're going to give it their all and they're going to make a difference no matter what.
Yeah, and, you know, John Calipari, you could probably do an hour podcast on John Calipari alone and talk about, you know, the past, the present. I mean, I think he is made for TV when it's all said and done, because he's got that personality. But I mean, you know, people at Kentucky don't care about personality. I mean, you know, they care about national titles.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that they always would get on Tubby Smith about.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because he never won a national title there, but he always had good teams. I mean, his son even played one of his last years when he was a coach there. I believe his name is Saul. So
yep.
I read an article about him.
I think Tubby Smith is probably one of the more underrated coaches for what he did at Kentucky. You know, he had a very good team at Georgia. Tulsa. I think it was Tulsa or Georgia. I forget which. I'd have to look that up. I mean, obviously the years at High Point did not go as well, but I think at that point, that was when they were just bringing in Tubby Smith. Not, you know, not that they want to tank, but I mean, Tubby was a name at that point too. He went to High Point. But yeah, I mean, you know, he actually was at Tulsa and Georgia, so I was right on two ends. But you know, I mean, Tubby, when you look at his Kentucky days, I mean, he had a few stinkers in there where they lost 10, which is unacceptable. But in two of those years they lost 10, they went to the Sweet 16. They went to 3 Elite Eights with Tubby. They went to, you know, I mean, they won a national title his first year. So I think when you win a national title your first year at Kentucky, you better do it your second year and your third year and your fourth year. And the list goes on and on. So I think once Tubby kind of start to slid, Big Blue Nation, which I'm not a part of, by the way, I just keep calling it Big Blue Nation, but I'm not a part of it. They went kind of kooky. And then things got really bad, because I mean, you know, Kentucky had some times there to where I don't think they're very memorable times to where people are.
Billy Gillespie era, I believe.
Yeah, that's I wasn't gonna throw Billy under the bus just in case he's watching. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Billy Gillespie. I mean, you know, and it's hard to succeed Rick Pitino. I mean, Rick Pitino did so well, and then I mean, after Billy Gillespie, you got lucky and got John Calipari. But I mean, again, you know, I mean, it's very, Kentucky is a different breed as opposed to anywhere else. And I mean, you know, the only places I would probably throw up there with Kentucky are probably your Kansas, your Duke, your North Carolina. Duke and North Carolina have kind of always decided to keep it in the family, so to speak. But, you know, I don't think Kentucky cares if they have an outsider, if they have whoever coming in, but they want to win national titles. And, you know, they're a different breed. They're a very different, when one of your biggest fans is Ashley Judd, I mean, name another school that has a, you know, quote unquote hot woman that's cheering for them like she is. So, you know, yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll counter that. Except, I would say Matthew McConaughey for Texas.
Yeah, I mean, all right. But I mean, you know, I think it. You know, and it's funny because, you know, the women are probably going to be like, yeah, Texas has got the best looking, you know, fan. And the men are going to say, well, hang on about Kentucky, you know. But, you know, I think you're right. Nobody else has a mega celeb like McConaughey probably. And, I mean, Ashley Judd is more of a mega celeb back in the 90s. I mean, she was the first kind of cool fan, so to speak. Now you got a lot of people. But, yeah, McConaughey definitely has that Texas thing going. He's probably going a little bit crazy with what's going on there. And I'll tell you what, Ashley Judd probably got her Calipari dartboard up right now and is just throwing darts each night.
Anything is definitely possible in that respect. But why don't we go over the top 25? Well, let's use the AP top 25. We have Purdue at number one, Alabama at number two, Houston at number three, Tennessee at number four, Kansas State at number five, Arizona at number six, UVA at number seven, UCLA at number eight, Kansas at number nine, Texas at number 10, TCU at number 11, Iowa State at number 12, Xavier at number 13, Gonzaga number 14, Auburn number 15, Marquette number 16, Baylor number 17, Charleston number 18, UConn number 19, Miami number 20, Florida Atlantic number 21, St. Mary's number 22, Providence number 23, Clemson number 24, and New Mexico at number 5. I mean, that.
Yeah, you've got blue bloods there, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just watching how when you're counting one for the Big 12, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. I'm counting at least seven in the top 25 right now. And then for Clemson being the leader in the ACC. And they're only down at number 24.
Right.
I mean, there's definitely parity here. And watching every week, it's going to be great just to see who's going to be going up and going down. But I'm just waiting to see how many more upsets we're going to have even before the conference tournaments. Because I don't think it's over with any of the guessing that they're going to be doing for that. And I am glad to see that Charleston did stay in the top 25, even though they suffered their first loss of the year. So them being number 18 at 21-1, that still is very good.
Yeah, I mean, don't sleep on the Charlestons. Don't sleep on the Florida Atlantics. They may not be that name that you're used to hearing about and everything like that. But, I mean, Pat Kelsey, the head coach of Charleston, he has been courted by others at times. And I think a lot of people have said, he would be the guy at a lot of different places. But, I mean, you know, Charleston, if you really want to dig up history and you look back at the history of Charleston, I mean, it's a very, very, very solid history. The College of Charleston's always been strong. And, you know, Florida Atlantic, I mean, again, a lot of people, I think, remember Florida Gulf Coast for Dunk U a few years ago when they were the 15 seed and pulled off the upset and then went on to the Sweet 16, I believe. But you know, you can't sleep on these teams. You know, I heard you earlier talking about Gonzaga and how Gonzaga had that loss to Loyola Marymount. Well, again, I mean, put in your old Google machine and look at Loyola Marymount. And I mean, you know, when you bring up the names of Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers, I mean, those were two solid players from the 80s. I mean, solid is actually probably an insult. They were superstars. And I mean, you know, small schools that maybe don't get the love because they're small. Well, I'm not going to say watch film, but I mean, do a little bit of digging there. I mean, Charleston's not a team I would want to see come March.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of the last 2 years for Stephen F. Austin, how they came into the tournament where they had, I want to say 30 or 31 wins. So, I mean, how they had gone through their entire gauntlet Or you could even go for Big Blue, how Kentucky the year they almost went undefeated, so they lost in the final. I won't say it was the final four.
Right. Well, I mean, I'll give you another good example. Where did Steph Curry go to school? I mean, Davidson that one year was, you know, the darling. So, I mean, you know, you – and, again, I mean, you know, old people like me have probably heard of a lot of these schools and maybe remember certain runs that Davidson had. I mean, at one point they were coached by Terry Holland. You know, a lot of people are going to remember some of these. But the kids out there nowadays and the – you know, the people out there are not going to remember small school. And I get, you know, there's obviously different players on the floor. But, I mean, you know, I think when you go into a school and you look at the banners in the rafters, that's a little bit of motivation. And I don't know how everybody's motivated. We're all motivated differently. But, you know, I think tradition, even if the tradition hadn't been at a place in 30 years or so, I mean, tradition's always there.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. And jumping over to women's basketball real quick. On Monday, we saw one of the unbeatens lose in Ohio State. They lost to Iowa 83-72, whereas Caitlin Clark got her ninth career triple-double, where she's in third place all time for triple-doubles. LSU was able to beat Alabama that day 89-51. Indiana was able to upset Michigan. Or they were able to beat Michigan 92-83, and UConn was able to beat DePaul 94-51. And that's all today. We had the women's Red River rivalry between Oklahoma and Texas, and Texas was able to beat Oklahoma, which that's a good year for them already, where Oklahoma is 16-3 and Texas is 15-6. Texas won 78-58. So, I mean, even though we're talking about the Big 12 with the men looking good, seems like the women are doing pretty good to start out with as well, which I'm curious to see how that's going to go just because for UConn, how they had to cancel a game this year because they only had 7 players that they could suit up. I'm more just waiting to see if anyone's going to be able to really challenge South Carolina for when the tournament comes.
Yeah, what a job Dawn Staley has done at South Carolina, the former University of Virginia product. I mean, we wouldn't have thought if I said to you, you know, 5-6 years ago, what's the main sport in South Carolina? Well, let's go back a little bit more. Let's go back maybe 10 or 11. People are not just going to mention a women's sport normally off the top of their mouth unless it's going to be UConn. You know, even Tennessee, when Pat Summitt was coaching them, I mean, yeah, they were good. But, I mean, everybody's always going to mention, you know, UT football and things like that. UConn is probably the one place I can think of with the exception of a few others. But, I mean, it's good to see, you know, you look at the ACC right now. I mean, you've got 6 teams ranked in the top 25. Virginia Tech is having a whale of a year at 16-3. And you know, I don't want to say it's a rebirth for Virginia, but Virginia had been so bad the last few years, and now they're at 14-6. So, yeah, you know, everybody's going to look at the bracketology on the men's side, but the women's side could be very, very interesting down the stretch. And, you know, I think the thing about it is normally you have not had the parity in women's basketball. Normally, I mean, if you know, even a close game is maybe a 20-point game, but now women's basketball, I think, you're really seeing those nail biters, maybe 6 to 8 point games.
I mean, it's good to see that, and you bring up a good point about that just because for some of the different schools you're talking about for UT and then for Connecticut, I don't know if you saw the article today, but they did an article about the Utah coach. I'm sorry, the UConn coach, Hurley. And in that coach, yes, on the men's side. Okay. And so they talk about how, for the men's side, how they're doing okay. Mm-hmm. Then they tell them to walk over to where the women's side is, where you see the pictures for the championships, the MVPs, and also the different numbers of Olympic champions they've had over there.
I mean, you know, at one point, think about this. At one point, the two of the more powerful college coaches were Gino Auriemma and Jim Calhoun, and they were in the same arena. I mean, I don't think a lot of people can name a school to where the men's basketball coach and the women's basketball coach. I mean, yeah, I know people are going to challenge me and say Bruce Pearl and Pat Summitt when they were both at Tennessee. I mean, yeah, I get it. There are exceptions right there. But with the level that UConn was at when Calhoun was there and the level UConn is at now, but even then when Auriemma had, you know, the Lobos, the Sue Birds, Maya Moore, I mean, there's no nice way to put it. UConn was just flat out nasty then. I mean, they were really tough to beat. And, you know, I think it's said in the movie Miracle where, you know, if you scored a goal in the Russian goalie, keep the puck. Because it doesn't happen often. I mean, if you beat UConn, first off, beating them at stores was just impossible. But, I mean, if you beat UConn anywhere, keep the ball. I mean, you know, that was a feat. And, you know, even with the men, I mean, Jim Calhoun, I mean, they beat Duke in the 1999 Final Four. So, I mean, UConn has been a rich tradition in men and women's basketball. And now Danny Hurley is having to kind of rebuild it on the men's side, but I think he's going to get there. He's got some good genes. His dad was a legendary coach up in New Jersey at St. Anthony's. And of course, you know, I'll probably get misty eyed if I talk about Bobby Hurley and what he did at Duke and everything like that.
Yeah. Well, him being the coach over at Arizona State. So definitely make progress. I mean, that's why it's just looking forward and also just waiting to see how different schools are going to do, not only game by game, but also week by week. Now, I did look up the top 25 for the women. It is going to probably change due to Ohio State losing, but for the AP top 25, we still have South Carolina at 1, Ohio State at 2, Stanford at 3, LSU at 4, UConn at 5, Indiana at 6, Notre Dame at 7, UCLA at 8, Utah at 9, Iowa at 10, tied with Maryland, actually. Virginia Tech's number 12, Michigan's number 13, Oklahoma's number 14, North Carolina's number 15, Duke's number 16, Gonzaga's number 17, Iowa State is number 18, Arizona's 19, NC State is number 20, Villanova's number 21, Illinois is number 22, Middle Tennessee State's number 23, Florida State's number 24, and Colorado's number 25.
That's
pretty good. Go ahead.
Okay. So when I was in high school at Jefferson Forest High School back in I graduated in 1997, so we won't add up the years. But I went to school with a girl named Kimmy Reeves. She's now Kim Bruton, and she is an assistant coach at Middle Tennessee State.
Very nice.
So go Raiders.
Exactly. I know. I mean, that is definitely pretty cool. I did want to make sure, like I said, we would go through the rankings in hockey real quick. For the men, St. Cloud State's number 1, Minnesota's number 2, Denver's number 3, Quinnipiac's number 4, Boston University's number 5, Penn State's number 6, Michigan's number 7, Ohio State's number 8, Western Michigan's number 9, Harvard's number 10, Cornell's number 11, UConn's number 12, Michigan Tech's number 13, Minnesota State's number 14, Michigan State's number 15, Providence is number 16, Merrimack's number 17, Rochester's number 18, UMass Lowell's number 19, Notre Dame's number 20. Now, for women's hockey, you have Ohio State at number 1, Yale at number 2, Minnesota number 3, Quinnipiac number 4, Colgate number 5, Minnesota Duluth number 6, Northeastern number 7, Wisconsin number 8, Cornell number 9, Clarkson number 10, Penn State number 11, Vermont number 12, Providence number 13, UConn number 14, St. Cloud State number 15. Now, the reason why I feel that that is important to mention is because later on you are going to have the NCAA hockey tournament, and when you have the Frozen Four, men or women, I don't know if you've watched that at all when it's come up, but it can be a pretty competitive tournament.
To say the least. I mean, you know, you talk about some of those schools, and I mean, you know, how many sports can you name with Denver or with St. Cloud State, or, you know, with so on and so on. I mean, hockey is life at some of those schools. I find it funny that you talk about hockey when you have a palm tree blowing in the background.
That's true. Let's see, for me, I'm a Washington Capitals fan, and it was a little bit rainy today, so I figured I'd do a background of something that is the complete opposite of what I've been enjoying today.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for somebody to jump out of the penalty box behind the palm tree and get on their surfboard to score the hat trick.
But let me know when that's going to happen. And funny you should mention Denver. The other thing that Denver is very popular for right now in college sports is lacrosse. They are usually contenders in the NCAA lacrosse tournament as well. So that's another sport that we've got coming up besides softball and baseball, because those three sports near the end of the year, they always make it to where everyone's trying to win or go home, and you definitely see legends made every game.
If I had any athletic ability, lacrosse would probably be one of the sports I would not want to play. And I'll tell you why. It's nothing against lacrosse whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But those people that play lacrosse, they're tough cookies. I mean, you don't have the padding on that a football player or a hockey player has. There's a lot of running involved. And plus, you have to catch a ball in a net. So you've got to have the hand-eye coordination to throw, to catch, and to be able to shoot on goal. I mean, I don't think lacrosse players get enough credit for being, I hate to use the term warriors, but I also don't think their skill is appreciated as much as it should be. And I'll tell you what, you talked about me kind of being Mr. High School around here. Lacrosse is not appreciated, or I'm sorry, lacrosse is getting to be appreciated because it's growing on the mm-hmm. youth. A lot of more people are getting into lacrosse, to where your big lacrosse teams used to be, you know, Johns Hopkins, UVA, Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing a lot more competitiveness across the board in lacrosse, but the heavy hitters are still the heavy hitters.
That's definitely true. And did you ever get hit by a lacrosse ball?
I have not had the pleasure.
I have. I would not recommend it. So
who is the most famous lacrosse player that you can name?
Let's see. Well, I will name Matt Ward, who was the captain of the undefeated Virginia championship team, I want to say, in 2003. What about you, sir?
Jim Brown.
That's right. Yep. Syracuse.
Everybody said Jim Brown was better at lacrosse than he was at football. And I mean, yep. You know, when we talk about Jim Brown in football, I don't think we need to talk about how great he was, but for people out there to say he was better at lacrosse, wow. No, I did not see him play in person.
I mean, I can understand that. I mean, if you want to go down that road, you could even say someone like Jim Thorpe, maybe, if you want to bring up somebody who was a great athlete for different sports. But I mean, we'll see. It's just waiting to see who's going to be that next person that's going to step up. And that's why I'm curious to see not only who's going to step up, who's going to win, and who's going to make a difference. Now, Bob, I appreciate you coming on here. So if we were trying to reach you on social media or take a look or follow you, where would we follow you?
Well, for one, I don't know why you would want to do that. But if you do, for some reason, you can go to The Sports Buffet. It's the word the, T-H-E, sports, if I need to spell that for you, probably don't need to get there. Buffet, B-U-F-F-E-T, no spaces. So The Sports Buffet. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on YouTube. And you can find me on Facebook, The Sports Buffet Podcast.
Perfect. I mean, yeah, no, Thank you for coming on. You can find me at alan.west.46 on Instagram or alanfwest on Twitter. I'm going to post on there at some point. It's only been, I did post one time last year, so posted. I'm going to try and make my second post within 11 years, but who's counting? So we'll see what happens. But other than that, thank you, sir. Everyone have a good night, and we will see you next week here on the Top 25 Rundown.